Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it. It said they were suckers. They wanted me for their army or whatever. Venture me giving a damn. I said never. Here's a land that never gave a damn about a brother like me and myself, because they never did. I wasn't winning, but just that very minute it occurred to me. The suckers had authority. Cold sweat as I dwell in a cell. How long has it been? They got me sitting in a state pen. I gotta get out, but that thought was thought before. I kind of played as a plan on the cell phone. I'm never using on the run. Brother, I like these that gun. Be another one. Back in a certain time, they do fine, y'all. To the side of the thumb drive. Nevertheless, they could not understand. And I'm a black man, and I can never be a veteran. All of the stress of situations unreal. I got a raw deal. So I'm looking for the steal.
That's my man. What's up, everybody? It's Citizen Payne, Eric Citizen Payne. Excuse me. That's my man, Chuck D. Black Steel in the Hour of Chaos. What's happening? It's been a little while, 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, we were on air. This is Kay's son and friends. I am Kay's son. And my friends, Wayne Gilman, our friends, my mother and eyes, our friends. I'm stumbling because I'm wondering if I said that grammatically correct. But our friends Wayne Gilman and Byron Saunders, it's the 22nd of December 2021, almost the end of 2021, first year of Joe Biden's presidency, and the way the Democrats are having troubles, you think it'd be the last year. I know midterms are coming, things like that, and one of my questions that I just want to pose to peoples out there that might be listening all over the place. Is anybody really surprised of the moves of Joe Manchin? One of the things that happened while we were away, anybody really surprised that he was going to do what he did and pull a Lucy that she used to pull on Charlie Brown, Lucy from one of the Peanuts characters that used to always, if you're an old head like me or a new head, you're probably familiar with the old theme of Charlie Brown, Peanut story. Charlie Brown, I guess older heads like us would know Byron. Charlie Brown and his dog Snoopy and the girl, his adversary, Lucy. And Lucy would always try to convince Charlie Brown to kick the, you know, she would hold the football up like they could kick a field goal. And she would always convince Charlie Brown, I'm going to hold it for you. You come and kick it. And every time she would pull the ball away and catch him every time. So that's what it seems like the Democrats are doing, listening to Joe Manchin, that he's really has some sort of good thing. His whole, I think, you know, and maybe I'm cynical, or maybe, you know, you slap me too many times in the face, I'm not going to trust you to not slap me again. I think that the whole time that he never had any good intentions, the whole time he was just going to there to sabotage the deal. Because he keeps doing that over and over again. And if you're mad at the staffers, like he said, or what other imbecilic juvenile excuses you give because the staffers said something or they know what they did, but so you're willing to sacrifice. I heard a woman from his state that was being interviewed say 300,000 people, families could have been helped. So you're willing to sacrifice them because you think also that some of the residents, some of your constituents would go drink beer and go deer hunting and some would spend it on drugs. What a despicable image and impression that this man has of his very constituents, the people who elect him into office. Now, I don't disagree that some people might abuse their privileges. Some people, I mean, people abuse everything. So there are individuals like that in the world. But wouldn't you, if you can help one kid not go to bed hungry one night, wouldn't that be enough for you, Joe? If you could keep one family's life on so the kids could go to, we're going to throw the whole barrel out because one apple is rotten. Makes you really wonder who really has the best interests of people at hand. You know, politics I think people get, and as speaking as someone who has been as up close to it as I have, speaking from experience, the more I get every day. But politics, the way it works, is that there's always people in the way of the individuals trying to do the right thing. Usually when you find the highest stakes in life, the most important things, there's good and evil, right? There's good and evil. So the good is trying to accomplish something. The evil is trying to keep that from being accomplished, right? Working in the opposite fashion. So in every endeavor, when you have good versus evil, you have those situations. And so one of the highest places in the world where those stakes are highest, meaning affecting the world and the most largest numbers of people, you have good and evil. And so it becomes a chore just to get to the point where you can help people. And a lot of people who come in, you know, that's why you have a lot of people over the last maybe 10, 15 years, certainly over the last four with the last administration, have left public service. Those people that they say they're impartial, those people that they say that they're career professionals, that their only allegiance is to the country, be it a white supremacist country for the most of the time that it's here and still going to this day. But still, you have certain individuals, and I'll get into that why I mention that, but you have certain individuals like the young man Vindman, who was an immigrant, but came and looked at the letters of the Constitution and looked at the words that are written on the paper, you know, the PR statement, I like to call it, our PR statement that we send to the world, our words that are written on the paper that we never really meant. But some people really read those words and really make them mean something and have them live up to their aspirations. So some individuals like that, I was thinking earlier today, some individuals like that, you know, they read those words and they say, we're going to play this to the letter of the law. If you're saying all men are created equal, that's why, you know, after a minute, they started putting these caveats in there. You know, black people can be kind of free, but not really three-fifths, because they realized they were writing a contract. Byron always talks about the Constitution. He'll get into it when he gets on, but they're writing a contract with everybody else, and they put their words down on paper, so then they immortalized it. Then they realized they had to live up to what they immortalized, because they're so busy immortalizing themselves. I want you guys to have a certain image, but they're so busy immortalizing themselves, they don't have time to realize their own hypocrisy. Let me bring in Brother Byron Saunders, the legendary newsman, historian. Brother Byron, we saw you, Wayne. You need to jump back on. Byron Saunders, what's up, brother?
Well, it's good to hear you, my brother. You know, I'm living here in Washington, D.C., although I was up in your area a week ago for 10 days doing business, and it's nice to be back home because there's no place like home. But other than that, my goodness, what a circus we have going on in D.C. And of course, I think in the midst of it all is the reflection of the haves and the have-nots, obviously, the money that controls political persuasion, because it's very apparent, and those who really are good leaders, those who want to commit to, especially at this time of the year, caring for those who are hungry and sick and need a home and need the medical attention and going through pandemics. And I mean, it's, you know, it's very, very apparent to me that in a state that is probably as poor as Mississippi and Arkansas and Kentucky, West Virginia is no pillar of economic success. It has many, many problems. And for one individual to uphold an entire state's need of support, social fabric, ask Mitch McConnell if he needs infrastructure money. I think Mother Nature just wrote an epitaph right all across the state of Kentucky. You know, these are the things that we have to pay attention to. And as I said, if your leaders cannot feed the hungry, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, give hope to the hopeless, and protect the environment and earth that we live on, Why do we need them to be our leaders? They're worthless. They have no redeeming value other than for themselves. So that becomes very clear and utmost because deals will be made. I'm surprised that the Democrats haven't bought, since they do have control of the Treasury, bought a couple of those Republicans who actually really do need the money, because if that's the next phase of political diplomacy called chicken in D.C., I guess they'll get to that too, because they're all selling each other out. And for what? So the slow arc of justice has got Jim Jordan between the vice, thank goodness. But you see, once again, you cannot run and hide from the truth. And what's being revealed right now, Eric, is a very cynical truth about those who try to manipulate, yes, for the purpose of the economy, get us all back hyped up, back in school, back in the workplace, back in the 100,000 seated stadiums, back to a COVID now Omicron that is once again got us behind the eight ball. And we keep wondering, well, why is it spiking? Well, come on. Does it really take that kind of a genius to figure that you're putting all these people together in open field stadiums and having just playing Russian roulette? Capitalism, Eric, has a very cynical side to it that unfortunately is rearing its very ugly head at this very moment. As much as Wall Street is kicking a lot of butt and making a lot of money, the truth of the matter is you can't buy your way out of a pandemic. And you cannot just use money to get beyond something that has got everybody in the same state. And those with the money are really in the same place we are, suffering, because this new variant is getting on those who thought they could buy their way out of everything. Hello.
It is not a respecter of person.
No, it's not.
Sure. Let's bring it in, Brother Wayne Gilman, our legendary newsman. Brother Wayne Gilman, how are you doing this evening?
I'm hanging in here. I'm just listening to the conversation. I've been distracted by some personal stuff, not to go public with that, but you talk about this problem with the COVID, and, you know, it's not just the continental United States. It's global, I still go back to Trump, the divisiveness, the politicization of this virus, and the fact that, you know, there should be a worldwide effort to arrest this pandemic in some way. I mean, it mutes. It seems now that the latest information, and I don't mean to go off topic, but from what I've been able to glean, Omicron has now surpassed the Delta virus. And, you know, like what Byron saying was a moment ago, a lot of this nonsense stems back to how this particular country handled, in my personal opinion, how it was handled from the very beginning last year. You know, it's just unfortunate. You want to open up certain parts in the global economy, and people should feel free to travel and come back home if they have to. And here it is. It seems like we're on the precipice of restrictions. We don't know if we should eat with our loved ones 2 days from now. You know, I'm mentally exhausted from this. You know, and I don't mean to use this as my bully pulpit, but you know, I'm lost. I want answers, and I'm lost, and I don't see this thing going away anytime soon.
Yeah, we don't really have. Some people just don't care to. You know, they have their own interests at heart, foremost in their brain, and you know,
yeah.
I think probably what's going to take is that these people be getting extinct. You know, it's going to take enough of these individuals dying off, and then even still, there's going to be a percentage of them that will still refuse to get the vaccine, and that's their right. But I keep saying, you know, when the worst case scenario is death, you might want to, you know, you weigh your options. It's just like with anything else, weigh your options. And if worst case scenario is death, that you might not believe, then you might want to do a little bit more research, reputable research, people that, you know, are not going to be trying to pimp you. But I truly think that it's going to get to the point where people are dying off, going to die off, and there's going to be a smaller percentage of those individuals who still will not get it, but there'll be people just keep getting it, and I think we'll get some sort of herd immunity from that perspective, from the 200 million that are already vaccinated, and the other however many that refuse to get it and are going to end up dying off because of the more extreme strains of this virus. Maybe there's more of an extreme strain coming after Omicron. Who knows? But that seems to be what's happening in the world now. And certainly we've noticed that with COVID, right, that these things seem to be – so that seems to be a new way of handling your health that people have to deal with. And it's unfortunate that it's become so political, but hasn't it always been political? And it's certainly been political as the health system has been used to as a tool for aggression against the black community, right? Within the auspices and the parameters of white supremacy, so, you know.
Right. Not to cut you off, Eric, but the tables are turning. I mean, statistical information has pointed out that there have been more whites now affected, but, like, not to say that our community has been fully vaccinated, but it just seems now it's not going in that community's favor. And
right.
You know, you figure a light would come on, you know, to have clarity and good judgment. And the thing that really bothers me the most are these folks who are working in the medical profession and know that they're being exposed and yet still feel that they're within their rights to, you know, follow their personal beliefs about whether to take the vaccine or not or what have you, you know?
Yeah.
And
Go ahead.
I was just going to say accountability is a critical word, Wayne, which you are really moving towards. And we must have that in everything that we do. You're right. The frontline workers cannot be wishy-washy, being accepting people coming in and then letting everybody know that they're not vaccinated. None of that crap. This is the time
right.
that government steps in and mandates. It is mandated now. I'm happy to say that it was nice that I could go to New York and it mandated that you can't get in a restaurant unless you show your card, your ID, you're showing that you've been vaccinated, you know, the whole work. I mean, do we need to go there? Absolutely. Is it necessary to exclude those who cannot abide by the law? Yes, because once again, it comes back to the perception of the law. The legality
right.
of being able to mandate something for the health of your nation and therefore stop dancing around with it and come hard with it because, like I said, it's no secret why our nation's COVID numbers are spiking. I mean, look at how many open-air events we've had. It's like major spreading events.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now that you've acknowledged it, stop trying to – and see, it's like the same thing that happened in Houston when those kids got killed at the stampede at the concert. Why? Because they were back in the back counting the receipts for 50,000 ticket sales. They were more interested in the money than the security of those people. That's just a microcosm of what's going on right now because if your companies and obviously – Wall Street understands it. Did it not drop 600 points first thing in the morning this morning? Yes.
Yeah.
So
it's obviously
that the two places that get it, New York and D.C., pay attention, United States of America.
And here's also
this is the real deal here.
Here's also another aspect of that too. You guys, Wayne, you were mentioning that in some of these rural areas, you know, people like. That aren't really vaccinated in these red states where it's being hit the hardest. But also you mentioned that some in our community aren't vaccinated. But I think the difference is that the majority of our community live in large urban cities New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, and those cities have adopted the mandate policy, or certainly an aggressive act. Certainly New York City, New York State have adopted the aggressive actions to combat the virus, mandates, vaccines, and things like that. So even with the unvaccinated within our environment, the vaccinated, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of creating where if you get exposed to it, if you have a breakthrough exposure, obviously you're not going to get that sick if you're someone who's been boosted, vaxxed and boosted.
Right.
You get as sick as people who just haven't been and get straight COVID. But I'm wondering if their immune system is not getting better able to fight off COVID where it doesn't result in their death. One of my cousins has it now, and I'm pretty sure he didn't get vaccinated. I haven't asked him. I can't say 100%, but I think he might be in that category of people who ain't going to trust it. So I understand.
Yeah, is he living in a city or?
Yeah, he lives here in Jersey, in Newark. So
okay. Wow.
You know, so, I mean,
well,
you know, but I mean, that's, you know, the whole thing is about the awareness of information to people, right? Make it available. And whether they,
and the thing is, you know, as you mentioned that, I'm reminded one of my other sisters I was talking to this afternoon, because we have this little drama going on. Hopefully it'll be resolved. But she was in Costco the other day. She lives way upstate. And mostly rural area. I mean, we're all over the place. But the bottom line is that her husband was saying, it's so amazing how all these white families are buying the test kit, and I guess they were selling them at these big box stores in great numbers. And now that, like, this was going on, like, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago before the situation really got severe now, where Omicron has now surpassed the Delta. And if either one of us were to go to the local drugstore, CVS, Rite Aid, or Walgreens, or whatever, you can't get a test kit tonight. I mean, if you're in the city, and this is why the government is trying to step up, you know, but I mean, it's almost like as if some other communities had advanced information, and this is pure speculation. This has nothing to do with, the show Kay and Friend. This is just me. And what I'm hearing and what I'm trying to understand, you know, why is it that all of a sudden there was a onslaught of purchases being made, like somebody knew something, and yet here it is, you know, we're always lost in the sauce, like we're the last to know. It's only now that they're trying to step up, the government is trying to step up. I mean, I've been following some of the reports tonight, where they're sending out kits to the urban areas so people can be tested. There are people standing in lines around the Bronx and Brooklyn and parts of other parts of the city. I don't know what it's like in D.C., but, you know, it's scary.
But it is scary. And I'll tell you, we're in the entertainment industry, whether by media choice or by other forms that we participate, and we go all across the spectrum of media. And one of the frightening things is that it's the business that I'm in, and so the business that I'm in right now is closing down on Broadway.
I've
got a show in the wings waiting to get up January 13th. But, you know, and it's an off-Broadway production, but it's still in the Village. It's still in New York City. It's still a great show. It's still got a wonderful cast, and it's still got people who are trying to work. Now, one little factor is that we still have to have the protocols, still have to go through the testing. I mean, I just left and tested the next day because ultimately coming back from D.C., from New York back to D.C., so I had to get tested. I got a 97-year-old mother-in-law. You know, I've got family. I've got friends. I've got a wife. I got to protect myself. And the industry that I'm now engaged in fully is on the edge of its own setback and that of a cultural acknowledgement of the city of New York, because that fuels an industry. Have y'all canceled Times Square yet?
Well, no. And that's another thing, too. I mean, you know, that does not make sense to me at all. You know?
See?
Could someone explain that?
Right.
People are trying to make their money. I mean, I went to see a play. I went to see a play last night. A friend of the family had some free tickets to go see this play. Slave
in New
play.
York?
On Broadway, yeah.
Okay.
A play called Slave Play. And it seems that some of the shows that need the money, you know, clearly they're willing to open up if they could. In the larger shows, like the Hamiltons and some of the other shows that probably could go without a performer or two, cancel their performances. And it was protocol. You know, you had to show your vaccine cards, which is what you have to do in New York and going in everywhere, and your ID and stuff like that. Although they weren't making people necessarily sit apart. You know, you could sit, you know, relatively close.
But you had to be masked.
You had to be masked, yes.
Right.
So, you know, as time goes on, you know, we'll see what happens depending on, you know, whether these people are going to get vaccinated or maybe listen to their Fuhrer. I don't know if you guys saw the day where Trump and Bill O'Reilly
about
male, what a bunch of, anyway. So, but Trump was trying to claim, telling people you should claim it. You should claim the vaccine because it started on, I mean, listen to the guy talk. I mean, he was actually
crazy.
You guys telling the crowd, you guys should take credit because it started and we tried to, it's ridiculous. And he got booed, you know, telling people to get vaccine. You know, there was a faction in there booing, but they were, him and Bill O'Reilly said they were vaxxed and boosted and stuff like that. But they're trying to slowly, or maybe not so slowly, adopt that like they do, say the exact opposite of what they've been doing. And point to the Democrats and accuse them of doing the very thing that they've been doing, which is a strategy that was instituted by Karl Rove, if you remember, during the Bush era. That was something exactly
right.
That they would turn around and accuse the Democrats of doing the exact shit that they were doing and throwing the whole confusing and at smokescreen, you know, the mirrors, throwing the mirrors up in people's faces and things like that. So, you know, it's really interesting. What do you guys think about, you know, we haven't spoken, so, you know, Mr. Mark Meadows is an interesting character. Is he not? I mean, he doesn't want to talk about the stuff that he wrote in the book. When he said that Trump was tested positive for COVID, he wrote it in the book, but then,
you know,
came out and did a press statement before he had to go to court saying he didn't mean it, or I don't know what it was, but it was like people saying it's like money, it's in your book. What are you talking about?
Well,
thank you.
Not like America didn't know as soon as they see Trump come out in that debate with Joe Biden, as clammy and as sweaty as he's looking, you know. But I guess just everybody assumed. I guess everybody just assumed that, it, you know, when you're a snake lying, a snake oil salesman, that's how you always look: clammy, sweaty, and just greasy, you know. So I guess everybody thought that was Trump's normal, you know, normal look. But what a despicable individual.
Well, Trump, his whole administration bought into the herd immunity concept. So that's for them, that get everybody sick because we have the herd.
Yeah, but that's kind of ass backwards. That wasn't really the
Hold on, look who we're talking about. We're talking about the individuals where everywhere he went, there was people getting sick.
So
thank you.
Kane died.
So you're saying he took it upon himself to be the Johnny Appleseed of herd immunity?
He was Typhoid Mary. He was the Typhoid Mary, proving that herd immunity could work because everybody around him was infected.
He was
and did not care. I mean, he did not
care,
you know,
to the point
who was exposed.
And Wayne, you have to remember, there was an article in Harper's Magazine. I believe it was Harper's. I may be calling it wrong, but it was not too long ago. Well, maybe about two years ago, okay, right before when all this was blowing up. And at the point of which it was quoted that Jared, that one of the Orange family, made a quote saying, well, he and his dad had discussed it because the COVID was on the East Coast in blue states. There's no need to rush
right
to get them assistance. that was a quote, I believe, from the Son to the Father.
Oh, yeah. That's been repeated quite a few times.
Well, now, yeah, that's
and I think it's in Bob Woodward's book.
But it was also obvious back then. It was also obvious by the way Trump was talking. He was blaming some of the blue state governors at the time for not doing the right thing. And I said it on air that part of his design probably was going to be to kind of hold back assistance and support for the blue states while helping out the red states. And clearly, he's trying to get us killed off. I mean, you know, the thing that I think is most despicable about it, why I say he's on top of everything else, he's a despicable individual, is that you got people that are believing everything you say, and they hang on every word that you hang on, and you're lying to them, and you're being a hypocrite. You're telling them initially that, you know, don't get sick, or you're downplaying it when you knew how severe it was. You got vaxxed, and you act like you didn't get vaxxed. You got out and held your little hand up in the air or whatever when you came back. I mean, you know, all of these individuals, people have to remember, people working in government at the high level, these are six-figure earners, all of these individuals, even members of Congress, too. So when I hear any of these people trying to do things that would hold up support and help for the average everyday American, the other 99 or 95% that is not making six figures, it revolts me. And they can be the other side, Republicans. I really should not care, and I don't really care because they choose to put themselves. I'm talking about rank and file people that choose to believe this guy. But for the basic sense of fairness, because I have a basic sense of morals and fairness, I think he's a messed up, effed up individual for exposing people that believe in him, believe in every word. He's damn near their Messiah. You're damn near their Messiah, and you're going to mislead these people like that? You are a disgusting MF. You're disgusting. You're the very person that you always talk about. He's got the nerve to call people disgusting. This guy is despicable. Despicable.
Oh, well and so are his cohorts on Fox News.
Every single one
of them. I mean, that to me is all those little disciples that he has, you know, in conservative media, they need to be called out. And I really think it goes back to where people get their information from.
Of course, and where they're willing to get it from, too. Because even those people, they're making a lot more money. They're making damn near six figures than the people who are watching them 24 hours a day, sitting home sucking up that garbage. And when you ask them a question to express themselves, they can't even clearly express themselves, and they don't really know what the issues are. Because the people they're trusting to give them advice on the issues aren't even presenting the issues to them. They're just writing a whole fantasy script made up and just following them with it.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, we got to get – America is a capitalist society. Like I was saying, there's people that's trying to do good in this world, and there's people that's trying to do bad and get in the way of people that are trying to do good. And that's why sometimes it takes so long for something positive to happen to reach the people that you're trying to serve, because you got these assholes in there that are just in there for themselves. And sometimes it happens, just human nature. Sometimes you have people who have personality quirks who want to be the queen of the office or want to be the main executive in the office, and they're playing little political office games that, you know, the people that are the end result, that are hoping you guys get along, can't really afford for you to be playing like simple, stupid-ass office politics in a congressman's office, you know, because there's so much at stake, you know. So there's so many factors that go into from help. I want to help people to how do I get to help, to how do I get to helping people, you know. And sometimes in a capitalist society, the very notion of a capitalist society works against that, because capitalist society means everybody got to make money, get your money, get paid. Sometimes getting paid supersedes doing the right thing in America, clearly.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, some of us, we sell out and we don't like to see that go on. And I often wonder, but, you know, we're at a point now in our lives and in this existence that we cannot afford to you know, do things like that. You know, I mean, we have to think this is a global situation. All of us are somehow affected, not just in the United States alone, worldwide. And, you know, yeah. we have institutions in place that are committed to doing the right things. There's always going to be some naysayers and evil folk out there. But I want to think that the vast majority of us would like to continue living peacefully in this planet, you know. And the UN and all these organizations are going to have to step up, you know, and try to see that they can just get the global heavyweights, the ones that are really controlling business around the world, to cough up some money to make sure that everyone is getting what they need, because thing will just continue to repeat itself. I mean, we're going into the third year. It's hard to believe that this has been going on since 20, most of 20, started off actually before 20, because he knew as early as December and November there were reports going on in 2019 that there was something going on kind of shady and questionable in China. But he chose to dismantle the very offices that would have, you know, somehow stopped things to accelerate to the point to which they've gotten to now, you know, because he was so vain. He was so about himself and felt that he was invincible, that he sought, you know, re-election would be no problem, and, you know, taking credit for stuff that the previous president had done. And here it is now. We're on the precipice in about a week or so of entering the third year of this crisis. Yeah, last year was the worst of it. This year got a little better. But next year, you don't know what to think. And a lot of us are fatigued, you know. And then when it starts getting personal, like what I'm experiencing tonight, it begins to hit home. And you realize you got family outside the country and they can't get back and all sorts of crap, and they did all the right things. You know, it's just crazy. It's
yeah.
freaking crazy.
Yeah, we have a very big country here, and there's a lot of people, and, you know, it's a lot of moving parts. People don't seem to understand that sometimes, how many moving parts there are, and that's what I'm talking about. You don't need people trying to screw up the works on top of having 350 million moving parts. You don't need to have that individual that's trying to throw salt in the game as you just try to keep the subway trains running on time. You feel me?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, you know, that's what we're fighting. I mean, that's what we're up against, right? That's what the world is up against. You got individuals that's just trying to just mess shit up just because, or because
right.
they were used to a way of life that was never right. And now it's time, there's a reckoning happening, right? The evil that's been done for all those years, there's somewhat of a reckoning. Not enough, not an equality reckoning, but there's something of a reckoning coming. And, you know, I hear people talking about, you know, I've heard some of the talking heads, and maybe it's just talk on TV, people talking about they're concerned about another insurrection or a second civil war. I kind of think that all of the other Americans that are quiet and kind of try to go along and be law-abiding probably would rise up against those who would try to create turmoil, and it probably would end up being, you know, maybe not what they would expect it to be quite, you know. But who knows? You hope it wouldn't come to that, but I think there's enough Americans who are tired of it, sick of it, that, you know.
I hope so.
Those individuals that think that they're just going to run up on stuff, you know, when nobody was looking, and, you know, and you know, hey, that's how you plan attacks, right? That's how wars are planned. People plan to make surprise attacks on people, although it shouldn't have been that much of a surprise since they were advertising it, and the guy in the White House was advertising it, and nobody seemed to pay attention. That's the other thing. Those that claim to be on our side, I wonder if they're really on our side, or whether they're just double agents or someone who's just lying in wait, like, you know, a couple of these senators that claim to be Democrats that are now being courted by Mitch McConnell, you know, like maybe you want to be a Republican. So, but, you know, and where does white supremacy lie in there? Or is it just an allegiance to wealth and richness, and the white supremacy is used as a smokescreen? I don't know. Or maybe it's used as a way to confuse the rank and file people who kind of, like I said, believe every word that these leaders, their so-called leaders, tell them. Either way, it's a shitty spot to be in, you know.
Right.
As we're supposed to celebrate Christmas. It's unbelievable.
Peace on earth.
I don't know. Not everybody has goodwill towards each other, but we'll see. Moving on to a different subject, I missed out on a very positive experience over the weekend. I happened to find out that my Hampton Pirates were supposed to be in town. Our Hampton Pirates, Byron, were supposed to be in town at the first Legacy tournament up here that was sponsored by Michael Jordan at the Prudential Arena here in Newark. And I'm embarrassed to say that I didn't know anything about it until my white neighbor overheard him talking to his girlfriend.
Oh, boy.
He's a basketball coach at Fairleigh Dickinson, and he was saying, do you want to go to this?
Okay.
He started describing it. I heard him say HBCU. I was like, he said Hampton. I was like, I went there. So I looked it up online, and I was going to go. But I got there that was so late. I was going to end up getting there about it started at 1. I was going to get there about 1:30, maybe 1:40. And knowing college games are 20-minute halves, about 40 minutes, about an hour and a half is when the college game will be over. So I was like, well, by the time I get there, I'm probably going to get there as it's just ending and people are going to end. So why pay and go down there? I come back home to turn on the TV and see that it's actually on TV on TNT. And Hampton didn't make it because of COVID. So the Delaware State played and North Carolina Central. And it was a doubleheader. The second game was Howard, and I forget who they played. So I missed out on a great day. In the middle, they had a slam dunk contest with Michael B. was one of the judges, as was Dr. J. and a couple other people. So, but it was the first annual, so we'll have to be sure to go to it next year, Byron, here in Newark, New Jersey, at the Prudential Arena. And I missed out on HBCU.
I don't remember hearing any advertising about that. That would have been something I would have watched myself.
Yeah, neither did I. But, you know,
and
of course there was no advertising, Wayne. Come on. What are we just finished talking about?
Yeah. I want to think in a situation like that where people would be interested in seeing and that would add to some money in the coffers, you know. Why would you want to limit that? You know, I mean, we all look forward to March Madness with the regular schools. Why would this be any different? You know, it is what it is. You know,
welcome to America. This play I saw called a slave play was. Have you heard about it, Byron?
Yes. Yes, it's got very interesting, decent reviews. So tell me about it.
What it is that it deals with, apparently the guy who wrote it went to Harvard or Yale.
Yeah.
And him and his boyfriend, I assume, was probably white. They would have issues about their interracial relationship with white supremacy and all that. So the story takes place where this, I think that's what it's based on his life experience. The story takes place where these three interracial couples are going through, they're having trouble sexually. So they're going through a sexual, you know, a program with some clinical people. And this particular therapy is called, for interracial couples, called antebellum something sexual therapy, where they acted out antebellum scenarios, role-playing. And the play begins with the sister coming out as a slave, sweeping. And there's music. They use music as triggers for people in their mind to deal with stressful situations, I believe. That's what the symbolism of the music playing. And this particular couple's fantasy was, because their lives were getting mundane, was that she would be a slave wench and he would be the white overseer. And that was their little fantasy, you know, to try to help with their sexual relations. And there was one. So her trigger music would be work, 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 work. So she would start twerking and stuff like that.
Oh,
so
Jesus.
The other couple was a mulatto guy, and he was married to a white woman. This all starts, you know, you don't find out that it's the therapy till after the first act, I suppose, first couple of scenes. You see this crazy stuff going on. And so their fantasy was he's a mulatto, and he's gone, his white mistress, she's bored and hot and bothered, you know, that whole old movie shit. And she master's not home and not taking, she's unsatisfied and wants her Lewis to come play for his violin, and it turns her on, and she has a fantasy and wants him to take his clothes off, and then she pulls out a big black dildo and says, Mama told me, does a monologue about her. Mama said, well, you know, times are hard between you and your husband, you use one of these so you don't have to go down there to the slave quarters. And so what happens is that she says, yes, I want you to, you know, you think that she's going to ask him to use it on her or whatever, but she ends up using it on him. And that's the end of the scene. And she ends up, you know, using it where it shouldn't be used for people like us. Brothers like us, probably that's not too cool. So then the third example is an Indian white servant who has a black overseer. And they've got a whole kind of relationship, little fantasy that they play. They're lovers, these two guys, and they play out this crazy little fantasy with them, the overseer coming down on him, and this guy's the indentured servant. He's giving them shit, and they end up having sex and all this stuff. And to me, the image of the black man, as usual, is always, to me, sacrificed. And I guess if I was a gay man, I probably would look at it differently. Maybe there's some gay men that look at it like, well, this is my story. But the whole antebellum sexual therapy and building it on that, and then they had these two therapists that they were the couple that based the therapy on their relationship because what they went through, so they wanted to help other couples. So they were two clinical psychologist types. White woman, black woman. They were, you know, the guy reversed, I guess, his real life relationship. And it's called the slave play at the August Wilson Theater, no less, which kind of might be a travesty to some. But it was a very interesting play. But it was, I didn't care for it. And it just seems to me that sometimes our people are so willing to be accepted by the mainstream culture. And I think sometimes, unfortunately, our people who happen to be gay, men in particular, I think they have it twice as rough, because obviously the rejection as a black person and then as a rejection as a homosexual in your own demographic. But I think in that sometimes you get caught up with – here's my thing. I think sometimes some gay – the Dave Chappelle argument, some – gay black people identify more with the gay movement than they do with the black movement, meaning that they just want to be free, want to be accepted. And so I think they find allegiance in white people who happen to be gay or homosexual. And so what happens is they kind of almost forget, just for me, my observations, that the white gay individual still has the whiteness. They're still white. So they still has that advantage, or they still get that deference. And what they see in the black gay man before they see your sexuality is your blackness. That's what's going to catch you the first hell. And then, yes, mm-hmm. you're going to catch the second hell from being a gay man. But so when someone like Dave Chappelle or myself notices that, wow, the issues of gay Americans, and I think that it happens to be white, or the movement has been able to accelerate, and they've been able to gain the rights that they seek and be accepted ever more and more on a daily basis. That movement has happened, and this is Dave Chappelle's point, at such a fast pace. He says in his show, he is amazed at how quickly that they've been able to achieve all these things when black people are still after 400 years have not. And so I took away from that is that sometimes maybe our black gay friends, or maybe just if we have white friends, we can just remind them, yeah, I agree with you that sometimes, you know, people that are making fun of you, it's just as fucked up, and I'm right there with you. But we need you to use your whiteness when at the right times to help us on the black issues. You know, because that's where I, for me, seems to be the gap, you know. And so when they want to express all of these things, sometimes the image of the black man has been, you know, has been made less than. And it's fucked up that in this society that a gay brother that sees himself as a man has to be made less than because of the discrimination against gay people, right, and a discrimination against black people. It's fucked up that it has to be that way, but that's the reality of it, that the image, the lack of balance of the image of the black man as always being less than a traditional man, less than a real man, and not feminine. They've always worked to make us feminine. You know what I mean?
And you hit it. I mean, this is really a subject that, you know, we could do an hour on, and it's not one of my favorites. But the bottom line is that what I'm beginning to question, you know, is that there is a media projection. I don't know if it's subtle in some opinion. To me, it's very overt when I see it. Maybe it's because I'm just drawn to this, but it seems like this. When I watched advertising, you know, for different products and even the hiring of some people, you know, in our community who are of that persuasion. And again, you know, I'm one of those late blooming brothers in terms of trying to be woke about this situation, if I may say so. And I always give credit to Rachel Maddow, because we used to go back and forth on this issue way back when, but I've grown to understand to a certain extent. I'm saying that I'm in complete agreement, but it seems like there's been more of a focus on showing that there is a burgeoning, or it was always there, gay black community. And I don't know if this is about acceptance. I don't know how a heterosexual white person perceives this, or is this another tool to make us to soften our and forgive me if I'm not saying this the wrong, if I'm not saying this the right way politically. Again, I grapple with this all the time, but the bottom line is that, you know, it's an issue. It's a double. I still maintain that, you know, someone outside of our color is always going to have, just because the way society in this country is, and that it will never change, because they unless there's an acceptance of what's going on with races in this country, white folks, I think, will always feel that they're superior to what we have to go through. We may have gone through certain accomplishments since the days of the civil rights era and before that, but I still maintain, you know, the very things that we talk about. It's got nothing with sexuality. It's just how society is. But I'm still taken back in what Madison Avenue is trying to project on TV and subconsciously trying to put into my mind. You know, I go back to the era where you couldn't get Ivory Soap to buy time on a WLIB right, when it was owned by black people. And now, right, you know, I look on TV and I see two black men kissing.
Yeah. Well, that's part of – that's what I'm saying. To me, and obviously this is a conversation we need to have one of our gay friends, black man friends on to comment on that, which, you know, we could have a larger conversation on that, because that's something that's I've thought about, and in trying to be accepting of it, you know. You have animosity for it. You're resentful of it because of, like you said, the image of two black men kissing shouldn't be. I mean, if we're non-homophobic and we want to have everybody be accepted, then that shouldn't bother us. But all we're saying, I believe, is there should be balance. And there's been no balance in the projection of the African-American man. And like I said, the stigma in the world of homosexuality as being less than, or people are not even people sometimes, that helped denigrate the image of the black man, because on top of being black, then they try to create you as less than this fucked up image perception of people who happen to be homosexual or different, any type of difference. They try to put that on. And so the image of the heterosexual black man as it relates to protector of the community, leader of, you know, all of these, those positive things that are projected with being, with manhood on the broad sense, right? That it puts on the roles that it put, that society puts on people. And so I think that's where, you know, the confusion, the layers of this, peeling back the onion layers, the many layers that they've denigrated our images, you know? And yeah, I that's not something that particularly is my cup of tea, to see two brothers kissing on screen, because I'm thinking the same thing, that the image, but the fact that we're thinking that, that's a bias that was put in our mind against people who, you know, who are maybe homosexual, queer, gay, lesbian, all of the letters. Sorry, I don't know them all off the top of my head, but
no, I hear you.
Who might be a person that is like that. So, you know, it's a big trick bag that African Americans are in, but sometimes I find that we're too accepting of the people of the other group just to be accepted by them. And we need to have our own.
It's a tough call.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right. You know, I think we should do an hour on this because it's a very sensitive subject. And, you know, I think of a very good friend of mine, a couple of people I know who, and again, it's because of my Caribbean background sometimes.
Right.
I
and then
I
there's
that,
that extra,
that,
there's that
yeah.
extra cultural layer. And the historical
yeah.
basis of that is a very real thing, though, right? I mean, those of us that know the whole buck-breaking theory and stuff like that, there's a very real thing behind that, you know? I like to be educated and enlightened by some of our gay brothers that we're friends with, and like to get them to chime in on the conversation. So maybe we could do that on a future episode. And if someone is listening, like to chime in on that and, you know, help us facilitate that, that would be cool. We got last 2 minutes. So, Brother Byron, why don't you give the people your send-off, your encouraging words?
I want to wish everybody understand this. The reason for the season is this, my friend. It's about the birth of a homeless child who was an immigrant, who was racially profiled. That's right. It's our story. It is a story of achievement, accomplishing peace on earth, goodwill to all men, women, children, and nations. That's the reason for the season. Anything else is secondary. Merry Christmas, everyone.
All right. Brother Byron Saunders, a legendary historian. We will talk to you again, my brother. Merry Christmas to you. Happy Kwanzaa. All right, Brother Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman.
Amen. I just want to echo the sentiments of Brother Byron, the thoughts of a colored man. And it's all we've talked about tonight, the thoughts of colored people. But, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Kwanzaa, and let there be peace on earth, finally. That's all I got
there
to say.
Is.
Keep the faith.
All right, Brother Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. We'll talk again. Merry Christmas.
All right. All the best.
All right. So that's, y'all can hear Rakim in the background, right? That's Follow the Leader. Think about it. What leader are you following? I'm Citizen Payne, Eric Citizen Payne. Most importantly, I'm Kay's son. And this is Kay's son and friends. You guys have a happy holidays. I'm going to say a shout out to my sister Gina up in heaven. My cousin Kim up in heaven. The year since my sister passed. My cousin Kim's birthday was the other day. So I know that the angels, the ancestors are watching over us. All right, I'm out. Case on the friends.
Run on my legs, you sweat, you feel like warm, you a step away from frozen, stiff as if you're posing, digging through my brain as the rhyme gets chosen, so follow me, I want you thinking you...